Imagine for a second that it's 2026. You wake up, you grab your coffee, maybe you're dreading the commute, or maybe you're just walking down the hall to your home office.
Right.
You sit down, crack open your laptop, and you pull up your analytics dashboard.
The daily ritual.
Exactly. And you're expecting to see the usual, some ups, some downs, maybe a little spike from that blog post you spent, what, 3 days writing last week?
You're hoping, at least.
You're hoping.
Yeah.
But instead, you see a flat line. Or worse, a slow, steady decline that's been happening for 6 months, and no matter how much you publish, the needle just isn't moving.
That's a feeling a lot of people are getting familiar with. It's unsettling.
It's more than unsettling. The board has been flipped. You aren't just competing with other brands anymore. You aren't just fighting for that number one spot on a list of 10 blue links.
No, that battlefield is gone.
You are competing with literally infinite AI-generated pages.
Yeah.
You're competing with these answer engines that summarize the entire web before a user ever even thinks about clicking a link. That old loop, the one where you publish more, you chase a few keywords, and you repeat, is broken. It's done.
It really is a stark reality when you frame it like that. And I think a lot of people are feeling that anxiety right now, even if they can't quite put their finger on why.
It's this background hum of panic.
It is. If you're still operating on that 2023 or, heck, even a 2024 playbook, you are going to feel like you are running on a treadmill that keeps speeding up while you're standing still.
Oh, that's a great metaphor.
You're sweating, you're working harder than ever, but you aren't going anywhere. You're burning calories, but you're not making progress.
Exactly. And that feeling of running in place is precisely what we want to dismantle today. So welcome to the Content Ship Podcast.
This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work. We talk about search, AI systems, and the operational side of producing content that actually survives change.
And just to set the table here, this podcast is created by people who care deeply about their craft, working intentionally with AI.
Right. It's not about replacing human judgment, but extending it. That mindset is exactly why we built Content Ship, to give a single expert the leverage that once required an entire team. This episode was manually crafted by Marian Ignev, our CEO at Content Ship.
So if you are feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of content that seems to be required to stay relevant right now, I have some good news.
Okay, I'm listening.
The solution isn't doing more. It's actually about doing less, but we have a radically different visibility stack.
Radically different. I like that.
And by the end of this deep dive, you are going to understand the difference between simply ranking and being extracted. And we're going to give you a 5-step checklist to fix your workflow immediately.
Extraction is the key word there. That's the shift we really need to unpack. It's the difference between being a destination and, well, being a source.
Okay, let's unpack that. Let's start with the big picture.
Yeah.
We're talking about the landscape in 2026. Why did the old model break? I mean, we used to just write good blog posts, right? Target a keyword, put it in the H1, sprinkle it in the first paragraph, get a few backlinks, and we were good. What actually happened to the mechanics of the internet?
Well, to put it simply, the input stream exploded. That is the most direct way to put it. Distribution rules are in complete flux because we've moved into an era of what we're calling content chaos.
Chaos.
Think about it. The barrier to entry for creating text, for creating content, has dropped to essentially zero.
Right. I can go to any LLM right now and say, write me 50 articles on cloud computing, and I'll have them in, what, 5 minutes?
5 minutes, if that. And that creates what we call the infinite competitor.
The infinite competitor. That sounds like a sci-fi villain.
It kind of is. In the past, you were fighting for attention against maybe 3 or 4 other major competitors in your niche. Maybe a dozen, if it was a really crowded space.
Sure, you knew their names. You checked their blogs.
You knew them by name. Now, you are fighting against a flood of AI-generated content that can cover every single long-tail keyword variation in existence instantly. If there is a question, there's an AI-generated answer for it within seconds of it trending.
That sounds terrifying. It sounds like drowning. How do you even begin to compete with infinite?
You don't. That's the secret. You don't compete on volume. But the bigger shift isn't just the noise, it's the gatekeeper. The gatekeeper has fundamentally changed. We have this new layer now, this answer engine layer.
You mean things like the AI overviews we see in search results or chatbots like ChatGPT?
Exactly. Whether it's a ChatGPT style assistant, an AI overview in Google, or some new hybrid we haven't even named yet, the core behavior is the same. Users are getting answers summarized from the web.
They're not browsing the web anymore.
They're not scrolling. They're not clicking on 10 different blue links to piece together an answer. They're asking a question and reading a synthesis that's been prepared for them.
So the user behavior has shifted from search and discovery to what? Ask and receive.
Precisely. The AI reads the web for them. So if your content is designed only to be clicked on, if you're relying on clickbait headlines or burying the answer on page 3 to keep your time on page metrics high.
Which was a classic SEO trick for years.
It was. And now you're losing. The AI will look at your page, see that you're hiding the ball, and it will just move on to a source that gives it the data cleanly and efficiently.
It has no patience for games.
Zero. And this leads directly to the failure mode we see so many teams falling into. We call it the volume trap.
I feel like I have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
The team panics because the numbers are down. So the boss comes in and says, we need to publish more.
That's the universal reaction.
And they try to use AI to 10x their output to keep up with the noise.
That is the instinct. They see the infinite competitor and think, we need to match that output. But
yeah.
Think about the logistics of that for a second.
It sounds like a nightmare.
It is. If a human team tries to use AI just to publish more, their backlog of drafts grows much, much faster than their editorial capacity to review them.
So you just end up with a folder of 500 drafts that nobody has ever read.
You end up with hundreds of drafts. No one has time to review them. No one has time to fact check them, to add insight, to add a human touch.
And without that review, you get hallucinations. You get generic fluff. You get content that's just plain wrong.
You get a quality collapse, a total collapse. And when quality drops in the pursuit of volume, performance tanks, it is a death spiral.
A death spiral. So yeah. You're spending more money, more time, more resources.
To produce worse content that gets less visibility, it's the definition of insanity in marketing.
Okay, so the definition of winning has to change. It can't just be use AI to write more stuff. That seems to be the very clear lesson of the last 2 years.
No. The new win is this. Use AI to decide better, draft faster, and ship with higher confidence.
Decide better. That's the key part that people miss.
That's everything. The core thesis we're exploring today is that visibility is no longer just about ranking. It is about being extracted.
Being extracted. That sounds almost surgical.
Yeah.
But it makes perfect sense. If the AI is the one reading your content, you need to make sure the AI can pull the right information out cleanly.
It's like we're moving from writing for eyeballs to writing for neural networks, and that's a whole new skill set.
So that brings us to this new visibility stack. We have to distinguish between two acronyms here. Everyone knows SEO.
Of course. Search engine optimization. The bread and butter for 20 years.
Right. Traditional SEO. Is it dead? Because we hear that every year.
No, it still matters. We aren't saying SEO is dead. It drives durable, compounding traffic. It's optimization for those 10 blue links, which, you know, still exists for certain types of queries, especially commercial ones.
But there's a new player.
But now we have a new necessity, GEO.
GEO.
Generative Engine Optimization.
Okay, talk to me about GEO. How is it different? I'm always skeptical of new acronyms. Is it just new jargon for the same old thing?
It's not just jargon, I promise. It's a fundamental shift in audience. GEO is optimization for machines to parse, understand, and crucially, reuse your content in summaries.
So it's about writing for a non-human reader.
At its core, yes.
That is a fascinating and slightly terrifying concept. Writing for a non-human reader. But wait, if I write for a machine, doesn't my writing become robotic? Do I lose the human connection, the voice, the brand?
That is the biggest fear people have, and it's a valid one. They think GEO means writing binary code or something, but it's actually the opposite.
How so?
In 2026, writers effectively have two bosses. They have two distinct audiences, what we call the two readers, that they have to satisfy simultaneously.
Two readers for every piece.
Okay. Reader number one is the human. They want relevance. They want insight. They want a voice. They want those aha moments where they connect with the material and feel like they learned something truly new.
All the things we've always strived for in good writing. And reader number two.
Reader number two is the machine, the large language models, the LLMs. They want explicit structure. They want unambiguous statements. They want citations.
They want facts.
They want verifiable facts presented clearly. The machine doesn't care about your witty intro about your trip to Italy. It cares about data integrity and structural clarity.
So to really understand GEO, we have to look at how an LLM actually reads. Right? It's not just looking for keywords in the same way a traditional Google bot does.
Correct. It's looking for semantic relationships and, most importantly, confidence.
Confidence. What does that mean for a machine? How can an algorithm be confident?
It's a great question.
When an AI like ChatGPT or Google's Gemini is constructing an answer, it's effectively predicting the next statistically probable word or token. If your content is unstructured, if you have a wall of text where the definition of a term is buried in a subordinate clause in the third paragraph,
which is how a lot of people write. Exactly. The model's confidence in extracting that specific fact drops. It views that text as high friction or fuzzy. It's not sure if that's the definition or just part of a larger thought.
So it's almost like the AI is looking for a handle to grab onto, a specific piece of data. And if the handle is slippery or poorly defined, it just moves to the next website.
That is the perfect analogy. GEO is the art of building those handles. It's about structuring your HTML and your syntax so that when the machine parses the vector space of your article, the distance between the user's question and your answer is effectively zero.
You're reducing the cognitive load,
yeah.
Or I guess the computational load for the machine.
You got it. That makes sense. LLMs prefer content that is safe to reuse.
Safe. That's an interesting word choice. What makes content safe for an AI?
Safe is the perfect word. When an LLM looks for a claim to put in a summary like, the best way to do X is Y, it wants structured support for that claim. It doesn't want to hallucinate or guess.
Because if it guesses and gets it wrong, the model looks bad.
The model looks bad, the user loses trust, the whole system fails, so it will always prioritize sources that are structurally unambiguous. It's a risk mitigation strategy for the machine.
So if I am writing a definition, I shouldn't bury it in paragraph 4 after a long, winding story about my grandmother's recipe for apple pie.
Exactly. Unless your grandmother's recipe is the definition. When an LLM looks for definitions or a list of steps, it needs clean headings, it needs scannable formatting like lists or tables. If you make it hard for the machine to find the answer, the machine will skip you and extract the answer from your competitor who used a clear H2 tag and a bulleted list.
That is brutal, but crystal clear. But what does Google say about all this? I mean, are they punishing this kind of approach? Is there a risk that by optimizing for the machine, we get slapped by a spam update for creating robotic content?
Not at all. And This is the part that should reassure people. If you look at Google Search Central's official guidance, they are very clear.
What's the bottom line?
Content is evaluated by its quality, not by whether it was AI generated or AI optimized. The helpfulness bar is the only metric that truly matters.
And helpfulness applies to both humans and machines.
Yes. If GEO makes your content more structured and clearer, that is helpful to humans too. Humans also hate hunting for definitions in paragraph 4. A clear, well-organized page is a win for everyone.
So we aren't trying to trick the engine. We are trying to help the engine help the user.
We are organizing information so effectively that the engine trusts us enough to quote us. We are making our content machine readable so it can be more human useful. That's the goal.
I love that framing. Okay, so we have the landscape. It's chaotic. We have the goal extraction via GEO. Now let's talk about how we actually do this.
Yeah.
This brings us to part 3, the principle of leverage. This is about the operating system.
Right. And this is where the conversation moves from theory to practice. The teams that are winning in 2026 don't necessarily have better tools than the teams that are losing.
They all have access to the same models.
Exactly. You have access to GPT-5 or whatever comes next. So does your competitor down the street. The winning teams have a better operating system around the tools.
It's not the car. It's the driver and the route they've planned.
Or the entire traffic control system for the city. Google talks about having a focus on maximizing advantages mindset. This is what distinguishes random experimentation. Oh, let's try this cool new prompt today, from systematic, repeatable compounding.
A system versus a box of tools.
Precisely.
So what is the division of labor here? Because I think a lot of people are confused on this point. They think AI should do everything, or they're terrified of it and think AI should do nothing. What is the human's job versus the AI's job in this new operating system?
This is the most critical distinction to make. AI's job is to handle repeatable, scalable work.
Like what?
Expanding topic angles, drafting initial outlines, summarizing sources, proposing metadata like titles and descriptions. It's the heavy lifter. It handles the volume of the grunt work.
Okay, so the AI is the intern on steroids. What's the human's job?
The human's job is judgment calls.
Judgment. That's a big squishy word. Break that down for me. What does that actually mean in a workflow?
It means strategy alignment. The human asks, does this article actually match our goals for this quarter? Or is it just chasing a shiny keyword?
Okay.
It means cutting unsupported claims. The AI might draft a sentence that sounds plausible but isn't true. The human verifies it. It means adding earned perspective, the I was there, stories that an AI can't invent.
So the AI can predict the next word, but the human predicts the impact on the business and the customer.
That's a perfect way to put it. There is a quote from the source material that I absolutely love, and I think it summarizes this whole section. If your process is messy, AI multiplies the mess. That is the mess multiplier effect. It is a critical, critical warning.
Can you give me a concrete example of a messy process that AI multiply? I want listeners to be able to really visualize this disaster.
Sure. Imagine a company where the product team and the marketing team aren't perfectly aligned. It happens all the time.
All the time.
Marketing thinks the software has feature X because they saw it in a beta 6 months ago. But the product team knows the software actually does Y because they updated it last week and changed the functionality.
A classic corporate disconnect.
Right. In the old days, a human writer might go interview a product manager, they'd have a conversation, the PM would say, oh no, we don't do that anymore, and the writer would catch the discrepancy and fix it before writing the one blog post. One blog post, one correction.
Manageable.
But now, imagine you feed a prompt to an AI saying, rate 50 articles about how amazing our feature X is. The AI doesn't know about the update. It hasn't had that conversation. It hallucinates features based on old data or general assumptions about similar products.
Oh, no.
Now you have 50 articles, 50 social media posts, 50 ad variations, all promising a feature you don't actually have.
And because you used AI to scale, you now have that misinformation spread across 50 pages instead of just one. You've scaled your misalignment.
Exactly. And fixing 50 pages is a nightmare. That is the mess multiplier. But the opposite is also true. If your process is governed and aligned, AI multiplies speed.
If it's messy, AI multiplies liability.
Perfect.
So you want to use AI as an assistant, not a factory.
Yes. That's the assistant versus factory mindset. Don't use AI to just churn out paragraphs. That's the factory model. That's the easy part. And frankly, it's the part that gets you penalized because it lacks soul and accuracy.
The hard part is everything that comes before and after the writing.
The hard part is matching search intent, reflecting the reality of your product, and surviving human scrutiny.
So the winning pattern is AI drafts, humans refine.
Yes, but the word refine is important.
Yeah.
The human editor is not there to just check for typos anymore. They are there to add the why now context. They are there to add proof points. They are there to make sure the content isn't just words on a page, but actual defensible value.
This feels like a huge shift for editors and content managers. They aren't just copy editing, they're almost acting like product managers for the content itself.
That is a great analogy. They are the quality assurance layer for the brand's public intelligence. They are the guardians of trust.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So let's get technical for a minute. We've talked about this idea of writing for extraction, but I want to drill down into the specifics. What does writing for extraction actually look like on the page? If I'm an editor looking at a draft that an AI just produced, what am I looking for? What am I fixing?
The mantra here is fuzziness is fatal. That is what you have to burn into your brain.
Fuzziness is fatal.
In the past, you could get away with long, meandering intros. You know the ones. Since the dawn of time, man has wanted to optimize websites for search engines.
Ugh, I hate those intros. The history of the wheel intro before you get to the point.
We all do. But now, in an AI discovery world, that fuzziness makes your content unusable to the machine. If the machine can't figure out what you're talking about in the first few tokens, it moves on. It assumes low relevance and high computational cost.
It's just not worth the effort to parse it. So how do we defuzz? How do we structure for the machine?
It starts with your headings. Headings must say what the section does. Use declarative, specific phrasing.
Give me an example, before and after.
Okay, a fuzzy, old-school heading might be thoughts on strategy. It's vague. It could mean anything.
Right.
A machine-readable, GEO-friendly heading is 5 steps to implement a content strategy. It's declarative. It makes a promise. The machine knows exactly what is in that section.
Be direct. Don't be clever with your headings.
Be explicit. Then, within the section, put the key point early. Follow with the supporting detail. This is classic journalism, the inverted pyramid, but you have to apply it to every single paragraph, not just the whole article.
And what about verification? You mentioned that's huge.
Huge. Your assertions must be easy to verify. That means you cite your primary sources, you link out, you avoid piling on ungrounded claims.
Because if the machine sees a claim without a source, it lowers the trust score of that content. Is that how it works?
That's a great way to think about it. It views it as higher risk. If you say 80% of marketers fail at this, the AI wants to know, says who?
And if there's no link?
If you link to a Gartner study, the AI says, okay, verified fact from a credible source. If you don't link, the AI says potential hallucination risk, and it will be much less likely to extract and feature that claim.
We have a QA checklist for extraction here in the outline. I think this is super valuable for our listeners. Let's run through it, but I want to give concrete examples for each one because these can feel a bit abstract.
Sure, let's do it. First on the list, does every H2 answer a clear question?
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
If your H2 is something generic like the problem, change it. Change it to why is traditional SEO failing in 2026? The first is just a label. The second is an answer to an implied question.
That's a great distinction. Labels versus answers. I like that.
Second, are steps explicit? No guessing required.
Okay, an example of a bad step versus a good step.
A bad, fuzzy step is communicate better with your team. That is garbage to an AI. It can't extract a specific action from that. It's just fluff.
Right.
A good explicit step is hold a 15-minute daily stand-up meeting at 9:00 a.m. via Zoom. The AI can extract that as a specific actionable tip.
Specificity is the antidote to being flattened into generic mush by the AI.
Exactly. Third, are definitions short and placed near the first use? This one's simple. If you introduce a term like GEO, define it in the very next sentence. Don't make the reader human or machine wait. The AI is building a knowledge graph as it reads. Help it connect the nodes easily.
Fourth, are key claims linked to credible sources? We just touched on this, but it bears repeating. Link out.
It's a sign of confidence in your content.
And fifth, and this might be the most important one, is it specific enough that an AI summary won't flatten it into generic advice?
This is the sameness test. After you've written your piece, ask yourself, if I took our brand name off this, could it have been written by any of our competitors?
And if the answer is yes.
If the answer is yes, the AI will treat it as generic filler. If it has specific nuance, data, or perspective that only you could provide, the AI treats it as unique, valuable data.
And briefly, let's touch on schema.org. I know this scares people who aren't developers. They hear markup and they run.
It shouldn't. At a high level, schema markup is just a labeling system for the web. It's a tool to make your page's intent crystal clear to machines.
It's not some magic ranking boost.
No, but it is a powerful clarity signal. It's right. Code that tells the search engine, hey, this block of text here, this is a recipe, and this text here, this is an FAQ section, and this number, this is the price of the product.
You're removing all ambiguity.
All of it. It's like wearing a name tag at a crowded conference that says, John Smith, CEO.
Yeah.
It helps people and machines know exactly who you are and what your function is instantly.
Okay, I want to pause here for a second because the picture you've painted is honestly a bit terrifying.
It can be.
We've got infinite competitors. We've got a machine reader that's judging our sentence structure. We're all trying to avoid this volume trap death spiral. If I'm a listener sitting at my desk right now, I'm probably looking at my current editorial calendar and thinking, my process is completely and utterly broken.
And for, I'd say, 90% of teams, it is. They're running a factory that was designed for 2015, and they're wondering why the parts don't fit anymore.
Okay, so this is our mid-episode break, and it feels like the right moment. If what we're talking about is resonating, if you're realizing your workflow might be multiplying the mess, then you should consider subscribing to the show. We break down these operational challenges every time.
Okay, so let's fix it. The source material outlines something called the hybrid assembly line. It claims to be a way to scale without losing that human trust we just talked about. But before we get to the steps, why that name? Why hybrid? What was wrong with the old assembly line?
Right. What makes it hybrid?
The old assembly line was purely human, which is too slow and expensive for 2026. Or the new panicked assembly line is purely AI, which is too messy and untrustworthy.
So hybrid is the balance.
Hybrid means we strategically insert AI where it adds speed and efficiency, and we strategically insert humans where they add judgment and trust. It's the best of both worlds.
Okay, let's walk through the five steps. Step one, capture inputs continuously.
This is all about stopping the brainstorming theater. You know the drill. Everyone sits in a conference room on a Monday morning, stares at a blank whiteboard, and tries to be creative on demand.
It's the most painful meeting of the week. Does anyone have any ideas for the blog this week? And you just hear crickets.
It's horribly inefficient, and it leads to mediocre, reactive ideas. In 2026, you need a live radar of your market, your customers, and your competitors. You need to be consuming data and signals constantly.
The source material mentions how ContentShip handles this by monitoring unlimited feeds and deduplicating breaking news. So the idea queue is actionable, not just a wall of noise.
Right. It's about having a constant stream of intelligence coming in, not starting from a blank page every single time. The best content answers a question the market is already asking. Your job is to listen for that question.
Step two, score ideas. This is the filter. And I want to spend some real time here because the source material says this is the most critical step in the entire process. Why is scoring such a big deal? Why can't we just trust our gut?
Because our gut is usually distracted. Our gut is biased. We see a competitor post something cool, or we see a trending topic on X, and we have an immediate emotional reaction.
We need a take on that.
Exactly. That's a reactive gut feeling. But the operating system mindset requires us to slow down for a second and apply a rubric. Most wasted drafts, most failed content comes from misaligned ideas that should have been killed before anyone wrote a single word.
We've all been there. We write a whole piece, and halfway through, or even after it's published, we have this sinking feeling of, this doesn't actually help our business.
Or no one is even searching for this, or this is for the wrong audience. So you need a rubric. You score every single topic idea against a consistent set of criteria.
What are the criteria?
The ones we use are persona match, keyword relevance, angle fit, timing, and competitive context.
Okay, walk me through this rubric. Let's take persona match. How do you score that on a scale? It feels subjective.
You make it objective. So persona match isn't a yes or no question. In the content ship workflow, you literally rate it from 1 to 5.
Yeah.
A 1 means my target customer might vaguely care about this if they're bored. A 5 means my target customer wakes up at 3 a.m. sweating about this specific problem.
Can you give me a concrete example?
Sure. Imagine you sell cybersecurity software for enterprise banks. Your persona is a chief information security officer, a CISO.
Oh.
A topic like top 10 worst passwords of 2026 is broadly interesting. It might get clicks. But for a CISO at a major bank, that's a persona match score of 1. They don't care. They know people use password 123. It's too basic for them.
It's fluff. It doesn't solve their real problem. Right. But a topic like a step-by-step guide to implementing verify on write protocols for legacy banking mainframes, that is a 5-foot. That is a burning, specific, expensive pain. That is a problem they don't have a good answer to.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So that's persona. What about competitive context? How do you score that one?
This is where most SEOs and content teams fail. They find a great keyword with high volume, but they don't look at who currently owns the search result page.
They don't look at the SRP.
They don't. If the top 10 results for your target keyword are HubSpot, G2, Wikipedia, Forbes, and the New York Times, and you're a Series A startup, your competitive context score is a 0. Or a 1. You are not going to displace them with a standard 1,500-word blog post. You have to be brutally realistic about the battles you can win.
So you have to do the math. You literally add these scores up.
You add them up. Let's say the max possible score is 25. You set a kill threshold. For us, it's usually around 18 or 19. If a new idea scores an 18, you kill it. You don't write it. You archive it and move on.
That requires so much discipline. It feels like you'd be killing 80% of your team's ideas.
You should be killing 80% of your ideas. That's the entire point. The volume trap we talked about earlier happens because teams are afraid to say no. They treat every idea from the CEO as a mandate. The scoring layer gives you the data and the permission to say, this is a good idea, but it's not a winning idea for us right now.
That saves so much wasted time and effort down the line.
It's the highest leverage activity a content team can do.
Okay, so once an idea passes the scoring gate, we move to step 3, constrained drafting.
And notice that word constrained. A draft must be easy to review. This is where the SEO writing assistant, the AI, comes in. It creates the first pass, but it is not a free-for-all. You don't just give it the topic and say go.
What are the constraints you put on the AI?
The draft, or rather the brief that the AI works from, must include an intense statement. What specifically will the reader be able to do after reading this article?
So you define the outcome first.
Always. It also needs proposed headlines and a detailed H2 outline that maps directly to the sub-questions people are asking about the topic.
Yeah.
You are giving the AI a very tight, very structured box to play in.
So you aren't just saying, write a blog post about SEO. You were saying, write an outline for a blog post answering why is traditional SEO failing? Targeted at marketing managers and B2B SaaS, covering these 3 specific points.
Exactly. The tighter and more constrained the prompt, the better and more relevant the output. This is why you should use a prompt library here. Standardized templates map to each stage of the process. Don't improvise your prompts every time. Systematize them.
Got it. Step 4, human enhancement. You're calling this the trust layer.
Yes. And I want to be very clear, this is not proofreading. I repeat, this is not proofreading for typos and grammar.
What is it then?
It is trust decay prevention. AI-generated content, by its nature, naturally decays trust because it tends to be generic, slightly out of date, or subtly inaccurate. The human's task is to reverse that decay.
What are the specific tasks for the human editor here?
First, they remove any unsupported claims. If the AI says something that sounds good but isn't backed up, cut it. Second, they add concrete examples from real customer scenarios. They add the stories. Third, and this is crucial, they ensure alignment with the current state of your product documentation and pricing.
Right, because the AI doesn't know that you just changed your pricing model yesterday.
Precisely, and that's a mistake that can cost you real customers. The editor's North Star here should be Google's own documentation on creating helpful, reliable, people-first content. Print it out. Put it on the wall.
Okay, finally, step five. Optimize for SEO plus GEO.
This is the final polish before you hit publish. It's about formatting for skimming short paragraphs, bolding key terms using bullet points, making the page easy on the eyes.
For the human reader.
For the human reader. And it's about adding those final GEO signals for the machine reader. This is where you double check your citations. Point to primary sources. If you're quoting a philosophy from Google, link to the actual Google blog post about it. That builds immense credibility.
And the source material mentions the Yes Optimist Crisis Survey as a specific example of a data point.
Right. It's a way of showing that you've done your homework. You're not just spouting opinions. You're grounding your argument in the real world with real data. It helps to contextually link to things that validate the problem you are solving.
So that is the hybrid assembly line. But there is still a danger here, right? Even with this rigorous process, AI content can still feel, well, a bit samey, a bit average.
The sameness problem. It's a real issue. Because LLMs are trained on the entirety of the internet, they are designed to compress content towards the mean. They give you the most statistically average answer.
So how do we fight the average? This leads us to part six of the outline. Originality is the moat. How do you build a moat around your content that the AI can't cross?
You have to overinvest in what the models cannot generate reliably.
What can't they generate? I mean, they seem to be able to generate pretty much everything these days.
They can generate information, but they cannot generate experience.
Information versus experience.
They cannot generate your specific earned perspective. They can't replicate a founder or an operator's point of view, the opinions that come from years of doing the actual work.
Can you expand on operator POV? What does that look like?
Sure. An AI can read 1,000 articles on how to run a marketing campaign and give you a perfectly competent summary of the standard advice.
Right, the textbook answer.
The textbook answer. But an operator can say, I tried that standard textbook advice, and it failed spectacularly for us because our market is weird. Here is the counterintuitive thing I did instead that actually worked. That deviation from the norm, that's gold.
Because the AI can't synthesize your specific deviation from the standard advice.
It can't because you haven't published it yet. You are creating new knowledge.
That is the definition of new knowledge.
Exactly. Your job as a content creator in 2026 is to create new knowledge. The AI's job is to summarize existing knowledge. If you only recycle existing knowledge, the AI will eventually replace you. It's a better summarizer than you are. But if you create new knowledge, the AI needs you to feed it.
That is a profound way to look at it. We are the feeders of the system. We are the source code for the next model.
We are the source code, and customer stories are a huge part of this. Permission-based real-world examples. Here is how company X in the real world used our tool to solve problem Y and save $1 million. The AI can't invent that without lying. You have the truth.
This isn't just brand building in a fluffy marketing speak sense. This is about creating distinct proprietary data.
And it connects right back to GEO. Unique observations are harder for competitors to copy. They are more likely to be cited by other humans. And they send a massive signal to the AI systems that this page is reference material, not generic filler.
You want to be the source of the AI quotes, not the noise the AI has to summarize and filter out.
Boom. That is the entire game right there.
Okay, let's bring this all down to earth. Part seven. The implementation checklist for small teams. We have a lot of listeners with small teams. They're hearing this and thinking, this sounds amazing, but I don't have the budget for a massive operational overhaul. I don't have a dev team on standby to do schema.
You don't need a reorg. You don't need a new org chart. You need a weekly cadence and a set of shared standards. It's a process shift, not a headcount shift.
Okay, let's run through the checklist. Number one, build a prompt library.
And I don't mean just a messy Google Doc of cool prompts you found on LinkedIn. This needs to be a set of official, standardized templates that are mapped to the stages of your assembly line.
So a prompt for topic expansion, a prompt for outlining, a prompt for the first draft.
A prompt for a voice rewrite, a prompt for generating metadata. Systematize the inputs. If you change the prompt, you change it for everyone, so your outputs are consistent.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Number two. Set human layer standards.
You have to define the bar. What does a pass look like for a piece of content before it can be published? Create a literal checklist.
What's on the checklist?
Accuracy pass, voice pass, intent pass, evidence pass. Make sure every editor and reviewer on the team is looking for the exact same things. Don't let one editor accept fluff while another one rejects it. Consistency is key.
Number three, add a GEO pass.
This is a new step for most teams. Before publishing, someone has to ask the specific question, can a model lift the key takeaway from this section without misrepresenting it?
So you're almost role-playing as the AI.
You are. You're looking for those handles. You're referencing Google's EEAT guidance experience, expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness to make sure you're sending all the right trust signals. You're looking at your formatting. Are the handles there for the robot to grab onto?
Number four, build a small but mighty flywheel.
The metric here really, really matters. 20-week unscored posts a month equals burn. You are just burning money and employee energy.
Whereas?
3 to 6 strong, scored, verified, human-enhanced posts a month equals leverage.
It's quality over quantity, but actually meaning it and building a system around it.
And part of that is repurposing. This is where AI actually helps you again. You take that one strong piece of new knowledge you created and you use an AI assistant to help you turn it into 10 LinkedIn posts, a newsletter, a sales document, and a product snippet. Squeeze every single drop of value out of that core human insight.
Don't just publish and forget.
Never.
Okay. And the final step, number five, measure ranking 80-day reference.
You need two dashboards now. Dashboard one is your classic SEO dashboard. Impressions, clicks, keyword rankings. You still need that.
But you need a second one.
You need dashboard two, which is your AI visibility dashboard. It answers the question, are we being cited? Is our brand name showing up in answer summaries? Are we appearing as a source for our core topics inside the answer engine?
Well, how do you actually measure that? Are there tools for this yet?
It is an emerging field for sure. In 2026, we are seeing tools that specifically track what they call share of model, but you can also do it manually for your most important terms. Go to ChatGPT, go to Gemini, and ask it, hey, who is the best provider of X?
And if it doesn't mention you?
If it doesn't mention you, you have a GEO problem. If it mentions you but gets your value proposition wrong, you have a clarity and structure problem in your content. It's a direct diagnostic.
Because if you don't measure reference, you will miss the trend until your organic traffic drops off a cliff.
And by then, it is way too late to fix it quickly. You'll be 6 to 12 months behind.
Wow. This has been a massive download of information. Let's try to summarize this. The SEO writing assistant, the AI, is only as good as the governed system you build around it. The goal is not more content. The goal is a governed engine that prioritizes ruthlessly.
And the fundamental shift from SEO, which is about ranking, to GEO, which is about extraction, that is the defining challenge and opportunity of 2026.
Yeah.
If you get this right, you turn the AI threat into your biggest asset. You become the source of truth for the machines that are teaching the world.
I want to leave the listener with a final provocative thought. We talked about a lot of steps, a whole new assembly line.
Yeah.
If they can only do one thing this week, what's the one thing?
Scoring. If you apply only one thing from this entire deep dive this week, add scoring gates before you start writing. Most teams are wasting 80% of their time writing content that should never have been written in the first place.
So the biggest leverage point is at the very beginning.
Scoring is the difference between creating noise and creating leverage. Learn to say no to good ideas that aren't great ideas.
That is powerful. Stop the assembly line until you are absolutely sure the product is worth building.
Exactly.
Ready to publish smarter, not just more. Visit www.contentship.io to see how AI scoring and governed workflows can turn a single expert into a powerful content team. And subscribe for more deep dives into the mechanics of modern content. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next deep dive.
See you there.
Actually, before we go, I want to ask one last question that I think might be lingering for a lot of people.
Go for it.
We talked a lot about this answer engine layer, and the core premise is that users aren't clicking as much.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get value? Brands need traffic to convert customers, right? If I'm extracted but nobody ever visits my website, do I really win?
That is the existential question of this new era, and it's one we think about constantly. The answer is nuanced. First, citation links and AI answers do get clicks.
They do.
Yes, and they're often from much higher intent users. If someone reads a summary and thinks, wow, that's a really smart point, they are more likely to click the citation to go deeper, so your overall traffic volume might drop, but your conversion rate from that traffic could actually skyrocket.
So it's the ultimate quality traffic over quantity traffic play.
Exactly. But there is a second, even bigger piece to this. It's the brand awareness play.
Okay.
If your brand is consistently cited as the authority in every AI summary about your core topic, that builds immense subliminal trust. When that user eventually does have a commercial need for a product, who are they going to search for by name?
The brand that's been teaching them everything they know through the AI.
The brand that taught them everything they know. It is share a voice, but it's happening inside the black box of the AI model. Your goal is to own that share of voice.
It's branding 101, but applied at the algorithmic level.
Uh-huh.
That's a fascinating way to end it.
It's the new frontier.
Okay, now we're really done. Keep building.